And good afternoon, folks. This is the Over the Fence Show, and thanks for listening in, whether that be live on Raglan Community Radio 98.1 FM or 89.0 Free FM, coming out of Hamilton throughout the Waikato, or maybe off your flash new website here at Raglan Community Radio, which is raglancommunityradio.nz, or on Spotify or the Apple and Google Podcasts. Welcome to the show, whichever way you're taking it. This is a rurally focused show. So we'll go through some rural headlines and a good look at the weather and then some gardening to-dos soon. And later on, we're going to be joined by Robin Allison to have a chat about co-housing on the show. Just thought it'll be interesting, an alternative kind of form of land use. So we'll get to that later on. But for now, while I get the headlines organised, I'm going to play for you a live song called, a very lovely song too, Sea of Joy by Blind Faith. Hope you enjoy this one.
Oh,
Blind Faith there with Sea of Joy, live from Hyde Park, I think in 1969. I hope you enjoyed that one. So, primary sector headlines time now here on the Over the Fence Show. Dr. Nicole Schon of Ag Research and two of her colleagues have called for worm monitoring to become more widespread in New Zealand. Schon wrote that earthworm activity commonly leads to increased plant growth, and an earthworm population is a sign of healthy soils. But it's not a common measure on farms or in quality monitoring. Ideally, she adds, there should be more than 400 individual earthworms in a square metre of soil. Schon wrote that all three groups of earthworms is most beneficial to soils. Epigeic earthworms, which live and feed on organic matter near the soil surface. Endogeic earthworms, which burrow extensively throughout the topsoil, forming semi-permanent burrows. And anisic earthworms, which are larger and form semi-permanent burrows, which are deep. The research has shown that most of the North and South Islands hill country lack the anisic group. That's the third group. And farmers and gardeners are encouraged to learn more at earthworms.nz. Eggs from fall army worm have been found in Tauranga, Biosecurity New Zealand says. Biosecurity New Zealand's Deputy Director General Stuart Anderson said a single egg mass of fell army worm eggs were found during routine surveillance and were attached to a gypsy moth trap in Tauranga's CBD. The fall army worm has caused millions of dollars worth of crop damage that should be in China, the USA and across Africa, and target cereal crops like grain and maize. Anderson adds the risk assessment by Biosecurity New Zealand showed the pest was a low risk to Kiwi farmers because low temps in New Zealand meant the moth probably couldn't establish in large numbers throughout the year. Specialty butter made from New Zealand grass-fed milk is now available locally after sales success in the US over the past couple of years. The Lewis Road Creamery butter is made from milk sourced only from farms owned by the parent company Southern Pastures and meets stringent and independently audited 10-star certified values that cover grass-fed, free-range, animal welfare, human welfare, GMO-free, PKE-free, environmental sustainability and climate change mitigation criteria. In 2020, the butter became the first and only New Zealand dairy product to be stocked US-wide by Whole Foods, which is owned by Amazon, and is one of the most expensive butters available in the US. And the trial of 8 cultivars of peanuts, which were selected for their high oil content to make peanut butter, are going well in Northland, said Greg Hall from Northland's Economic Development Agency, Northland Incorporated. The trials, which are funded by Northland Incorporated, the Ministry of Prime Industries and PICS, the peanut butter makers, are across 5.5 blocks near Awanui and in the Kaipara to see if there is potential for peanuts to be grown commercially in the region. Greg said peanuts seem to love the free-draining, sandy, loamy soils and warm temperatures of the North Island's west coast. And peanuts need about 600 mils of rain in their 110-day growing season. Gray adds one cultivar is growing particularly well across all 5 sites, and PICS will make trial batches of peanut butter from the New Zealand-grown peanuts to see which varieties are best. And similar to that one is Plant and Food Research is undertaking a feasibility study to see if almonds can be successfully grown in Hawke's Bay. The project has backing from central and local government, and PICS again. And PICS Chief Executive Stuart McIntosh said, almond butter is a product in our range. And like the peanut work we're doing in Northland, we're interested in the prospect of using New Zealand-grown almonds. Plant and Food Research Business Manager Declan Graham said, if the feasibility study showed almond growing had promise, the next step would be growing trials. He adds, we'd look at experimenting with the future orchard planting system approach, which optimises the use of sunlight for higher yields and quality. He adds, we'd also investigate if we can grow almonds using less water compared to commercial practices overseas, as well as an integrated pest management approach. So, yeah, exciting stuff there. And I love that about New Zealand. We've got such a diverse climate and diversity of soils and little microclimates around that we're kind of like a little botanical ark floating in the South Pacific. And the chance to home Kaimanawa Wild Horses has been extended. Kaimanawa Heritage Horse Welfare Society Chair Sue Rivers said the applications have been extended by a week. She adds they have received 62 applications this year so far, and DOC is aiming to remove about 150 horses. Rivers said you don't need to be a professional horse trainer to do it, and the horses can be tamed relatively quickly with patience and understanding, and people should get in touch with them if they want to get a hold of a Kaimanawa Wild Horse. Kind of the headlines for the week, folks. And on that Kaimanawa horse note, there's a song here that has been played on the station. I think Raglan's Dave Mabey's involved with this, from the Saddle Blasters. It's called Opodi Angels, and it's about Kaimanawa horses. Hope you enjoy this one.
My beauties before me, run with the wind while you can. No telling what fate will befall you, no telling what man has got planned. God sent me down here to find you. I'm here to do all that I can. So run, my beauties, before me. Run with the wind while you can. Way out in the forest, way out on the sand, hide where the bullets won't find you, and I'll be there as soon as I can. Before me, use every trick that you can, 'cause I know you are running the gauntlet, one orchestrated by man. The cloak of time will surround you with a test of love in its hand, and I'll do my best to convince them just what you have done here for man. Way out in the forest, way out on the sand, I haven't got all of the answers, but I'll do everything that I can.
Angel there about the Kaimanawa horses. Now it's time for weather here on the Over the Fence Show. And a cold front pushes northward over the South Island today, reaching the lower North Island this evening, with southwesterly winds behind the front becoming quite strong, especially in the east. Cold temperatures come with the front and rain in the west and south of the South Island. And this lees, and then showers will spread up the east coast. And rain arrives about the lower North Island this evening, then showers spread up the east coast overnight. There may even be a few snow flurries about the lower South Island this evening and overnight to maybe 600 or 700 metres, they say. Possibly frosts on Friday, Saturday mornings inland on both islands, but maybe only like 0 degrees at dawn in sheltered spots. And so yeah, there's not a massive chance of any frost, but yeah, they're putting it out there anyway. And early next week, ex-tropical cyclone Philly moves down the upper North Island, but models are uncertain on how much the effect will be on Aotearoa. And today in the Waikato, partly cloudy with occasional showers, maybe heavy in the morning, then easing with winds from the northwest, changing to southwest in the late evening. There's a high chance of a little rain this evening and possibly thunderstorms, they're saying. Basically cloudy with fine spells until Monday, and then on Tuesday, Wednesday next week. At this stage, it looks like there's a high chance of some light rain. So you might get a few drops maybe next week. This is looking like the best chance at the moment for that. And daytime temperatures range this week from about 19 to 23 degrees Celsius. And nighttime temperatures range between, it'll be 9 tomorrow, which is pretty cool, a lot cooler than it's been. That's tomorrow night. But the rest of the week's looking between like 11 and 16 degrees Celsius. And the west-northwest winds today turn southerly, then south-southwest tomorrow. And Friday, southerly. Saturday, westerly. Then Sunday, they go north-northeasterly to nor'easterly into early next week. High humidity today, somewhere between 94 and 96%. The sun rose this morning, ladies and gentlemen, at 6:39 a.m. and will set at 6:09 p.m. The length of visible light is 12 hours and 22 minutes. The actual day length is 11 hours and 29 minutes. And tomorrow will be 2 minutes and 22 seconds shorter than today. And the moon, well, it's a waxing gibbous, somewhere between 20 and 28% illuminated. Rose at 11:16 this morning and will set at 8:51 this evening. And it's going to move into the waxing gibbous phase on the 9th of April, so in a few days' time. So there's kind of a wrap of the weather. There's not heaps of rain in there, which I know a lot of people are wanting, but yeah, might be the odd bit here and there. So yeah, there's no kind of massive dumps on the way, but might get a little bit here and there. All right, I'll come back some gardening to do soon, but first, here's an early one from Weezer called My Name is Jonas. Hope you enjoy this one.
Thanks for all you've shown us. This is how we feel. Come sit next to me, pour yourself some tea, just like
My name is Jonas the Airboy Weezer off the Blue Album, which I think was their first album, maybe. Can that be right, Aaron?
I didn't hear the start of the sentence.
Aaron didn't hear the start of the sentence. Good station managing for you there. Anyway, gardening time here on the Over the Fence Show. And by the moon from today till Friday, a good time to plant out spinaches and silver beets. Start planting out brassicas like your broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage and kale. From Saturday, sow green manure crops like your lupins, oats and mustards. And what can you plant this month in the Waikato? Follow me now. Alyssum, beetroot, blueberries, bok choy, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, calendula, carrots, cauliflower, celery, cyclamen, daffodil, daisy, delphinium, dianthus, feijoas, forget-me-not, garlic, hyacinth, kale, leeks, lemons, lettuce, limes, mandarins, mesclun, onions, oranges, pansy and viola, parsley, peas, polyanthus, poppy, radish, rhubarb, rocket, silver beet, snapdragon, spinach, sweet pea and tulip. Also a good time to thin out your carrots, add sweet corn to the compost once they're finished. Stake your Brussels sprouts, tie up your beans, which may keep producing for another month or so. Gardening to-dos, right there for you. Now it's time for New Zealand band called Bressa Creating Cake with their song Egyptian Tanker.
Lying on ocean bed, the fishes are coming anchor. There goes a humpback whale. An Egyptian tanker lying on ocean bed, the fish is sick of an anchor. There goes a humpback whale. An Egyptian tanker lying on ocean bed, the fish is sick of an anchor. There goes a humpback whale. An Egyptian tanker. After the age has gone,
Bressa Cretan Cake, their New Zealand band, called with their song Egyptian Tango. I hope you enjoyed that one. And as always, if you want to get a hold of me here on the show, overthefenceradioshow@gmail.com. Yeah, always looking for more people to... Oh, rainfall. I forgot it again, didn't I, folks? The rainfall. I was just about to mention I need more people to give me rainfall, and I forgot to read it out in the weather. So here we go. Ron Rumble out there in Ruapuki, no rain, but had some heavy dew. Chris from Aukiti tops the charts this week with 18 mils. Thank you, Chris. Three Streams had 4 mil. Thank you, Callum. And again, really interesting. They're only a few hundred metres as the crow flies from each other, but there's a big difference in rainfall. The Hutawai, 5 mils. Thank you, Craig. And Wainaro had 13.5 mil. Wairamarama had 10 mil. Tikwiti had 13 mil. And Te Aroha and Te Amutu had no rain this week. So, yes, we got there eventually yet again. I don't know why I keep forgetting the rainfall, but there we are. And we'll be back soon enough with our guest for today, all going well, Robin Allison. Talk about co-housing, but for now, let's listen to Street Chart, Stoned Again. Welcome back to the Over the Fence show, and we're joined now by today's guest, Robin Allison. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, kia ora, Craig.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, Robin. Really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure.
And I was in the town hall just here where the studio was on Bow Street in Raglan maybe a couple of weeks ago. And I saw you do an excellent presentation about co-housing and what you've been doing up West Auckland on your property, Earth Song. So we'll get on to that, but I guess tell us a little bit about yourself first, Robin.
Oh, right. Well, I trained as an architect back in the day and was designing sustainable houses, passive solar, et cetera. And just, felt that single houses can be designed well, but actually they were really missing out on a big part of life, which is you know, cooperating in with other people and with neighbours. So about 25 or more years ago, I diverted really from architecture into planning this big co-housing project in Auckland that became Earthsong. I've got two sons. They were children when I started, and I just really, really wanted them to grow up in a more supportive environment where we were part of a bigger tribe, really. So that was one of the motivations.
Yeah, interesting. And so the Earth Song, did you see any other developments, co-housing developments, before you decided on that's what you wanted to do out West Auckland with Earth Song?
Well, I didn't really in New Zealand, although I was aware of you know, quite a number of sort of 70s attempts at community, usually rural community.
Yep.
But what I did find was this incredibly inspirational book called Co-Housing, written by two American architects, and that really described the whole model that was originating in Denmark, actually, and lots of communities based on that model were described in the book, and it was just so inspiring. And so that was the model that set me off on doing that in New Zealand. And now, of course, there's a lot of people around the country really looking at doing something similar because, you know, your isolated house in the suburbs lacks such a lot, really, that we could have in our lives of support and sharing and camaraderie.
Absolutely, and it takes up a lot of land as well. From a land use kind of angle, you know, just a plot in a section where it could be a lot more, you can make it a lot easier on yourself for the various jobs, you know, the gardening and the growing and preparing of food and that, if more people were chipping in.
Absolutely, and I mean, the thing with the suburbs is they're all designed around the car, really, because there's an assumption that each household is separate from all of the other households, and they need to hop in their car to drive to get, you know, go to the shops or take the kids to school or whatever. So it takes up an enormous amount of land area in roads and parking and car use, whereas with co-housing, basically the houses are designed together to be serviced by pedestrian pathways, and the cars are seen as a really useful tool, you know, but not sort of the central thing that we should be designing our lives around. And so cars are usually kept to the edge of the site, and people hop out of their cars and they come walking through the community through the pathways, and it absolutely frees up so much land for people, you know, living, socializing, and also for growing and beautiful plants. So it makes a lot of sense in terms of land use. You get just a much more beautiful environment around your houses while, you know, not sort of giving up very much at all, really.
Yeah. And I guess tell us about, it's a 3-hectare block where Earth Song is now, is that right?
3 acres.
3 acres, right,
so,
3 acres, okay.
1.2 hectares.
Yeah, and so... Now, when you first, I guess, saw it, what, 25 years ago or whatever it was, I understand, I was looking through it's not very nice website too, I must say, and it was a kind of an abandoned orchard kind of.
Yeah, so it was an old orchard in Rānui on the sort of western edge of Auckland. There's still a lot of fruit trees here from that orchard, although, you know, they're pretty old now. It was an old orchard, but it was also very close to the centre of Rānui suburb, and so just down the road really are the shops and community centre and medical centre and things like that. So and the train line on the Western Line from Auckland. So it really suited our needs just so well, because we just wanted to be within reach, within walking distance of a whole range of community facilities and public transport, because that, you know, that means that you need your car so much less.
Yeah.
You can just walk around and you get to talk to people while you're doing it.
Yeah. And how many were involved in the original group when you were trying to figure out if you can do it or not?
Well, it the group grew really over time. So it kind of started with me. I called a public meeting and explained what co-housing was and what we might do together. And a few people joined from there. There were really three of us who laid the foundations for the project over the next year and a half. And then other people started joining. And so by the time we bought the land, there was probably about 25 people active in the group at that stage.
Right.
Yeah, so it's just it's grown over time, and people have come and left as well. But you know, there's a really solid core there.
And how many properties are there where people live, and how many people actually live at Ursong?
We've got 32 households.
Jeez, that's a lot for a small area, isn't it?
On 3 acres, that's right. Yeah, it's medium density housing. Actually, you know, it's very good use of urban land, but it doesn't feel crowded. It doesn't feel anything like most medium density housing, because we keep the cars at the edge, and it's all gardens around the house, and pathways, and trees, So yeah, 32 houses, and they range from one bedroom up to four bedroom houses,
mm-hmm.
and some of them are stacked apartments. And there'd be about maybe 65 people live here, including children. I need to do a count up every time somebody asks me that, because people, you know, yeah, people get flatmates and then lose flatmates and etc. But yeah, round about 65.
All right, okay. And I guess, how does the basic model work? Everyone's got their own like house they go to, but there's also a common house, I understand.
Yeah, so it in some ways it's very kind of normal. You know, everyone gets their own house, their own little garden. They run their own lives in the way that they would anywhere else. But what this co-housing model does is it adds in another layer of home, really. And so as well as our individual homes and gardens, we also have shared gardens, and a big shared common house. So we have a large, beautiful community building with a large dining room where we can have movie nights and hui and parties and things as well, and lots of other shared facilities in there. We've got a big shared laundry, we've got children's rooms and other meeting rooms, and also a woodworking workshop, which is just fabulous, because people have you know, brought their individual woodworking machinery and tools, and collectively we've got such a well appointed workshop, and lots of gardens and sheds and orchard trees.
Yeah, and I guess with the gardening and the planting, you grow a lot of your own food, I'd presume?
Yeah, we do, yeah. I mean, you know, and we are medium-density housing, so we're not into large-scale food production, but a lot of small-scale food production. And we've always based our sort of philosophy on permaculture, so which is about using every space that's available really in different ways, and having kind of layers of understory and trees. So we do produce quite a lot of food from a very small space. All our greens, a lot of food in the summer, a lot of fruit. We can't grow big bulk crops like a lot of potatoes or kumara, but we do grow small plots of potato and kumara.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'd have, like I said, there's a few of the old fruit trees still there. You'd have a few other fruit trees around, no doubt?
Oh, look, I think I think somebody counted up. There's over about 200 fruit trees on this this small piece of land.
Gee whiz. Yeah,
and some of those are the old ones, and there's a lot of new ones as well. So just every variety of fruit, really, that we feel we can grow in our climate, and including bananas. And somebody's growing rice in our pond.
Right.
We're trying a few things out.
Okay. And as far as the water goes, do you guys collect all your own water off your roofs and things like that? And your wastewater, are you plugged into the mains at all, or do you deal with all that kind of stuff yourself?
Well, we wanted to deal with that ourselves, and we had a design done for on-site wastewater treatment and tried to get consent for it, and actually that was probably one of the main things that we didn't achieve that we were hoping to. So we are plugged into the standard wastewater system, but our design was actually done intentionally to make it easy in the future to switch it over to an on-site system if we felt that we could get that through. And yeah, we collect all the rainwater off the roofs into tanks that supplies most of our water needs in the houses. And we have an overland sort of stormwater swale system to minimise the runoff from our site in a big storm. So water's very important, and we're really looking at it as a huge benefit and resource, you know, rather than a waste product that you're trying to get rid of as fast as possible.
Yeah, you know, I've seen some lovely photos and in your slides as well of the swales and everyone chipping in and helping out, and yeah, no, it's a very picturesque spot, isn't it? You know,
yeah. It is. It's a very beautiful environment, and it just keeps getting better, really, as it matures.
Yeah, and I suppose not lately, but I mean, do you usually get groups coming through, just having a nosy around and seeing what's up?
We get a lot of visitors. Yep. Obviously, as you say, it's been difficult lately, but usually we have 4 public tour days a year when people can just come along and are given a presentation and a walk around and a cup of tea and talk to the neighbours. And we also run a lot of tours on request for groups, either just 1 or 2 people who are interested, or whole classes of university students or school students, overseas delegations, etc. So, yeah, a lot of people have been through Earthsong, and you know, you can think it looks beautiful in a slide, but it's not really till you're walking around and hearing the bird song and, you know, smelling the natural oils and things that you really get the full picture of it.
Yeah, I bet. And did you have much trouble with, like, council just getting it all going and how they work with you guys now?
We didn't have a lot of trouble, partly because we chose a site in the suburban area that was already zoned for medium density housing, so it was, you know, we were allowed to do what we wanted to in that case. We had a bit of trouble getting our overland stormwater system consented, just because it was outside what the council's sort of code of practice at that time, even though philosophically they wanted to move in that direction, but they hadn't quite yet. So we had to do a bit of pioneering on that aspect. And that was Waitakere City, actually. That was before the councils amalgamated into the Big Auckland Council.
Right, yeah.
So Waitakere City was an eco-city at that stage, and that made things a lot easier.
Mm.
These days, Auckland City, I don't know if they even know about us, mostly.
Right.
it's so big, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's certainly a big clunky machine, Auckland City, now, yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, you've just finished a book a couple of years ago. Congratulations, Robin.
Thank you.
Called Co-Housing for Life. And I'll just read the little blurb on the website here. Robin's book is a very personal story of the collective endeavour of developing Earthsong Eco Neighbourhood. It also describes the key elements and structures that allowed a diverse group to create large, innovative housing development.
Yeah, so it's kind of two things, really, in my story. It just, for years and years, people kept saying, when are you going to write the book? This is such an interesting story. And it really is an incredibly interesting and dramatic story of how we came about. You know, there's just there were challenges and joys, and a number of people have sort of told me that it actually reads a bit like a novel, that story of how Earth Song came about, because of the difficulties and the drama and how we got through that. So it felt like a story that really needed to be told, and part of our sort of social history, really, in New Zealand, I think.
Yeah.
But it also felt important to really tease out the things about what we did and how we structured Earth Song that really helped, so that we could help other people who had similar ideas. So half of the book is kind of a workbook, really, explaining in more detail our structures and systems around how we work together as a group of people managing ourselves, and some of the key design differences, and how we put the money together and things like that. So it's I've had very good feedback about it, and it just feels great to have it all down and available to people.
Yeah.
Because there are groups around New Zealand now who are working on their own projects, similar projects, and so many people are really looking at their own, life in the suburbs and thinking, God, there's got to be more than this. There's got to be an easier way, a more supportive way. And yes, there is. So really trying to support other groups to get their own projects off the ground.
Okay. Yeah. And how long did you take in writing the book, Robin?
Writing the book? I started actually saying, now I'm writing the book, probably in about 2016, and then it was published in 2020. So, yeah, sort of 3 or 4 years of not full-time effort by any means, but it was always there as part of what I was doing in those years.
Yeah, cool. All right. And you say there's a few other people looking at it. I know for a fact there's one, some people looking at doing a co-housing thing here in Whangaroa. And there's another one down Takaka as well, isn't there?
Right.
Were you involved with that one at all? Or?
On the edges, I get phoned up every now and then by the people who are working on it when they sort of need a bit of support or have a particular question. They've got to a particular place with what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's there are a number of groups around the country where they kind of know that I'm there and available if they just need a bit of extra support or information.
And that'd be what, up and down the country or all around?
Absolutely.
These other groups?
Yep. Hawke's Bay, Taranaki, Whangarei, Christchurch. There is a group that moved in Dunedin. They moved into their completed co-housing neighbourhood latish last year.
Okay.
There's groups in Tauranga, just all over the place.
Right, it really is all over the place, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It really is.
Yeah, and I guess, what you've done at Earth Song, is that kind of paved the way a bit, to make it a bit easier for these other people. Hey, you've got your book and your experiences you've already had, but I guess, with councils and things too, just as, they've got somewhere they can look at and say, oh, well, it worked here and there, I guess.
Exactly. And also, there's a place that people can come and look. So if several groups have worked with councillors and encouraged councillors of their local area to come and visit Earth Song and learn about how we did it here, and that gives a bit of comfort, I think, to people who think it's a new idea and don't really understand it, and then they come here and they think, wow, this really makes sense. So yes, it's I think it's very helpful in that way. And there's nothing like actually having something in place to make it known that it's possible. It's not just a dream. It's a very feasible thing to be doing.
Yeah. And I'm just looking on your website through the awards section, and you've come up for a few, international awards for what you've done, and national. Yeah.
There was the World Habitat Award. When was it? About 2008, I think, that we were
2009's got here. Yeah.
Projects. Yep.
What else we got here? Place to Belong. The Green Neighbourhood, New Zealand Life and Leisure. All right. 2005 Auckland Regional Council Environment Awards. Property Sector Urban Design. Finalist in the year of the Built Environment Awards. Jeez, you've got quite a lot of them, haven't you?
Yeah.
Well, that must be quite gratifying, getting all these, people looking at what you've done.
Absolutely. And you know, it's all kind of recognition and makes it hopefully a little easier for the next people because it's more widely known. And, you know, co-housing as a model is so much more widely known now than it was when we were working on it. What we need now is government support, I think. You know, central and local government coming in behind with the structures and systems and sort of support that would really make a step change in people's ability to do it.
And have you noticed any movement in that direction from other central or local governments?
No, to be honest. I mean, there is often a lot of interest, but there hasn't yet been any tangible change or support. Although I believe that collective housing is now named in that new report that came out just a few months ago from central government.
Mm.
So it's starting to get in there, but it needs a lot more, you know, a lot more support. And the thing is that in Denmark now, where the model originated, similar population to New Zealand, they've got about 5 million people. They've got about over 700 communities based on this model.
Gee,
in
Liz.
Denmark. And, you know, quite a good proportion of new builds incorporate co-housing. And it's really not, you know, it's becoming mainstream. It's part of the accepted ways of building housing because it's just such a great model for people still having their own autonomy in their own lives and yet also having a lot more support and a lot more sense of community, you know, of helping each other out and being part of something.
Yeah, because loneliness, especially in the West, is a massive problem at the moment. Dislocation from community, and this kind of certainly solves that one. Yeah, yeah.
And you know, and life can be a lot easier when you've got young kids. If there are more people around, for older people who might be living in their own home still, knowing that there's a whole lot of other people around who can, you know, step up on occasion. It's just for people who live alone for whatever reason, you know, that they still get to live alone and they get to live alone around people who know and you know, like them and are part of community. So it really works so well for all ages, I think, and a whole range of different people.
Personally, I think I could see it being a big part of you know, the future of land use, to be honest, because it solves so many problems, doesn't it? You know, it's really expensive to try and buy a house anywhere now, and, you know, I presume this would be slightly cheaper. And then, the whole sense of feeling part of a community and, you know, growing local grown food. I mean, these are all things that are talked about now, you know.
That's right. And you know, if you cluster the houses a bit closer together, then it leaves a whole lot of shared land, which is still of a size that it can be productive and you can grow just as much as, you know, as if there was one household on it, actually. And the thing is, you've got a lot more people than one household to do the work of making that land productive. So really, I think it makes so much sense in so many ways.
Yeah. All right, well, we better sort of start thinking about wrapping up there, Robin. I mean, and if people want to get a hold of your book, Co-Housing for Life, how do they go about that, Robin?
Well, you'll find it in some shops, but if you have trouble there, you can buy it directly off my website, which is www.robinallison.co.nz.
That's an Allison with an A, A-L-L-I-O-N.
That's right, Robin with an I, robinallison.co.nz, and I'll just post it out.
Yeah, okay. And I see, if people want a tour, I guess the website, and I presume you'd have like a Facebook page and these kinds of things as well?
So the Earth Song website, that if you do want to come on a tour, The Earth Song website has a section for you know, people who want to visit and sort of just get hold of people through that email address. Yeah, we don't have a Facebook page, to be honest, at okay. Earth Song, but... Yeah, just the website.
No, the website's got a lot of stuff on there, so yeah, go
sure
check that
has.
Out. It's, yeah, just look up Earth Song Eco Neighbourhood and you'll be able to find that one, folks.
Yeah,
earthsong.org.nz. Earthsong.org.nz, there we go.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks again for coming on the show, Robin. Really appreciate it. And yeah, good luck with it all. And I presume you'll just be touring around the country here and there
and,
doing stuff when you can. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dropping seeds everywhere.
That's the way to do it.
Co-housing, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Sweet.
All right. Oh, thanks very much.
Hey, thank you very much, Robin. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Go well.
Ka kite.
Bye. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was Robin Allison there talking about co-housing and Earth Song up in Ranui, up in West Auckland. Hope you enjoyed that. Yeah, fascinating kind of chat, isn't it? So, and yeah, like I think it's a big part of the future of land use, I think anyway, as the population grows and housing continues to get more expensive and much slower to build. And that's kind of the show for the day. So I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week. So, ka kite anō. Have a great week and yeah, see you soon.